All right, let's do a redo since we got him on the phone.
Okay, here we go.
Call the meeting order. Now, Dr. Wright, can we do the...
Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
So is he here? Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James? Mr. Lohi?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Wright is here, we do have quorum.
Thank you. Start off with the initial investigative reviews. And first up is case 2233. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Sure. Case 2233, the complainant is Joseph Brecken, respondent is Monica Durgan, UVM. On August 17th, 2021, Enzo, an approximately 1.5-year-old male French bulldog, was presented to respondent for a neuter procedure. During the exam, respondent noted that the dog had stenotic nares and offered to widen the nares while the dog was under anesthesia for the neuter procedure. The pet owner agreed. Later that afternoon, staff sedated the dog with TT depths and monitored him until he was ready to be intubated. While being intubated, staff noted the dog becoming cyanotic and a pulse could not be found. Respondent was alerted and CPR efforts were initiated. The pet owner was contacted and instructed to come to the premises as the dog had arrested. When the pet owner arrived, she was informed that the dog had passed away. And the committee had concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. And it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3222-3211, gross negligence, for failure to be aware of the proper dose of TT depths to be administered to the dog, which led to respiratory depression and eventually death, and not properly monitoring the dog prior to surgery. The committee also voted to recommend ARS 3222-3218 as it relates to RQ11502H3 for failure to perform an exam on the dog within 6 hours before anesthesia was administered or surgery was performed. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, we have the respondent and counsel.
Are you okay if I take my mask?
Absolutely. Please state your names for the record.
I am Dr. Monica Durgan.
And David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Durgan.
Thank you. And I give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to address the investigative committee's recommendations in this case. First, with regard to the gross negligence recommendation that was made based upon an assumption by the committee that Enzo was given an excessive dose of the pre-anesthetic medication TT-Dex or Dextomator. This is not true. I administered a dose of 0.0216 milliliters per kilogram to Enzo. If you look at the reference materials I've submitted, including the peer-reviewed publication Analgesia, Sedation, and Anesthesia, the guidelines published for Dextomator, the dose I administered was within the range of acceptable dosages and was not excessive. Specifically, the dose I administered was between 0.02 milliliters per kilogram, which is deemed profound sedation, and the 0.035 milliliters per kilogram, which is considered an appropriate surgical anesthesia level. Since the dosage amount was appropriate, I respectfully disagree with the suggestion that I was grossly negligent in connection with the Dextomator dose in this case. With regard to the pre-surgery monitoring, Enzo was continuously and appropriately monitored and observed by both me and my staff right up until the time he was intubated. Specifically, as I noted in my narrative response, after Enzo was checked in and examined by me at approximately 7:25 a.m., he was placed in a kennel that overlooks the surgery area. That kennel is easily visible from all three surgical tables, and there was never a time between 7:15 and 1:55 p.m. when Enzo was administered the dexdomitor, when he was not in open and plain view of my staff and myself, who are trained to continuously monitor all kennel patients throughout the day. Ahead of today's review hearing, my counsel and I have submitted pictures, premise pictures, so that you can see how visible Enzo was and how he was monitored prior to surgery, as all of our patients were on that day. And finally, I will admit that although I did perform an examination on Enzo at approximately 7:25 a.m., I did not verify that my exam findings were in the record, and that was a medical records oversight on my part, as that is a minor record-keeping violation that did not affect the diagnosis or the care of the animal. I am prepared to accept consent agreement for violation of ARS section 32.22.33(b)(3) in this manner. In closing, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to address you.
Thank you. Anything from council?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just for clarification, the consent agreement would be for that only for the minor record keeping violation. Yes.
And we have the complainant. Would you care to address the board?
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record.
Yes, Joseph Bracken.
Thank you. You may have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. First, I would like to thank the investigative committee process. It was very good, and as a layman coming in, I wasn't exactly sure what I was in looking into there, but it was very great, and staff was fantastic, so I appreciate and congratulate the investigative committee. My statement is actually very simple. I 100% support the two recommendations from the investigative committee, and furthermore, my dissatisfaction with how this all happened. It was not only how it happened, but how it was handled afterwards. And the email that I received from Dr. Durgin, again, claiming that there was nothing that was done wrong and there was nothing I would not do the same in the future, is quite troublesome. In addition, we were not given the opportunity for a necroscopy, and the dog was cremated without my authorization or written authorization. Shortly after this occurred, so we had no opportunity to actually determine what the doctor claims was not negligent, which was the overdose in terms of the sedation, as well as the fact that the medical records actually show that once they actually gave the anesthesia, the dog basically sat there and died for 6 hours with nobody watching them. That's the hard part about this whole entire thing. And it's clear as day inside of the records. So I appreciate again the work that was done by the investigative committee, and I hope this board upholds exactly what they recommended, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Let me step back. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, thank you. In case 2233, reading through all the materials and listening to the investigative committee, the dose of the TT Dex cocktail in this case, whether it was appropriate or not, I think is a great question. We need to really discuss this at some point. Was this dose given, with that be appropriate for minor surgery or just for intubation? I think there are some questions there. I think veterinarians in general are aware of the inherent problems with brachiocephalic patients and anesthesia, particularly germane to this case. This brachiocephalic, the propensity for respiratory depression due to the relaxation of tissues with pre-medication. There are many, many references to protocols for brachiocephalic patients. And while there is quite a bit of variation regarding choice of drugs, adjustments, whether you should use this drug or not, but all of them have in common that this is these patients need special care and consideration when administering anesthesia. It appears in this particular situation in the protocols in place in this hospital, there was little or no special protocols for brachiocephalics. No pre-oxygenation of the patient, no adjustments in doses, using different doses for brachiocephalics. And again, particular to this case, we know the patient had stenotic nares. There was an indication in the record that there was a presence of stridor in the patient, and the owners were prepared to give the owners information on soft palate resection. And so while I'm in a general agreement with the investigative committee, I believe that questions certainly remain that need to be clarified in this case. And so I'd like to hear from the other board members their thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I think I definitely have more questions. I mean, the dosing question is hard because it is within the range.
Right.
So that's a very difficult one to say, is it wrong? But
right.
I mean, there's still questions around stuff. But yeah, I think there are some questions to ask.
I don't have that much anesthesiology background. I'm listening to you more than I am going to talk.
You're good listening. Yeah. So I would support it for sure.
Okay.
Moving forward.
So we have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion in case 2233 that we move to an informal.
I'll second.
A motion of floor and a second to move 2233 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes, and we'll move this case to an informal. Next up, is a two-pack. Dr. Wright, you're refused. Case 2236 and 2237. Tracy, could you read the summary and the questions are the same?
Yes, so there, Mr. Chairman, can I pause just for a moment? Ms. Ross was disconnected. Let's put her back on the phone.
Okay.
On August 18th, 2021, Mia, a 10-month-old female Shih Tzu, was presented to Dr. DeMonte to have a deciduous tooth extracted. The dog was anesthetized and intubated. Within a short amount of time, it was noted that the dog arrested. CPR was initiated but could not be revived. It was noted that the pop-off valve on the anesthetic machine was closed. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 32-2232 number 11, gross negligence, failure to ensure the anesthetic equipment was functioning properly, the pop-off valve was closed, and staff was supervised, which ultimately led to the death of the dog. Also, ARS 32-2232-12, as it relates to R311-5011, failure to show respect to the animal owner for not speaking with the pet owners after the dog's passing or any subsequent communication. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. And then on case 2237, the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
And we have the one respondent and counsel.
Correct.
Would you please come forward? Please state your names for the record.
Rowena DeMonte.
And David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. DeMonte.
Thank you. Now I'll give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I have been a practicing veterinarian for over 20 plus years. And during that time, I've performed thousands of surgeries and anesthetic procedures without incident or complication. On August 18, 2021, Mia was presented for a routine deciduous tooth removal. She was appropriately premedicated at 12:25 and was induced with propofol at 12:30. I auscultated Mia the entire time the propofol was being administered. I then stepped back and supervised the technician as Mia was intubated. As the technicians were placing the monitoring equipment, I started to evaluate the tooth that was to be removed, an upper left deciduous canine. Because I needed a number 2 elevator that was not currently at hand, I walked approximately 5 feet away from here to another surgical stand to get the elevator. When I turned back, I saw that the anesthetic circuit was disconnected from the ET tube. I reattached it and simultaneously noticed that the reservoir bag was inflated to full and taut. I immediately reacted and sternly asked if there was a problem with the anesthetic machine, and at the same time pulled off the reservoir bag from the anesthetic circuit. At the same time, my technician lost an audible heartbeat. We immediately initiated compressions in an effort to revive Mia, and during the course of those efforts, the pop-off valve to the anesthetic equipment was supposed to be closed. It was immediately opened as compressions continued. As the veterinarian in charge of the surgery, I take full responsibility for what happened, and we have been forthright and honest with the owners about what happened. I personally called the owners at about approximately 12:45 and told them that Mia had arrested and kept them apprised of our efforts to revive her and asked for the owner's consent to continue CPR. The owners authorized CPR and said they would be coming to the practice. I continued with CPR for another 35 minutes and then called the owners again to update them on Mia's status. When the owners arrived, they were met by my manager, the practice manager, Hilary Ponder, who assumed a responsibility for communicating with them, and during their initial consultation at approximately 1:43, the owners elected to discontinue CPR. They then visited with Mia and said their goodbyes and left. The next day, Mrs. Ponder called the owners and was upfront and honest about the fact that the technician had failed to verify that the pop-off valve was open at the start of the procedure. As Mrs. Ponder noted in her statement, the call was emotional as expected, but the owners thanked her and the practice for her honesty. I sincerely feel terrible about the outcome of this routine surgery and wish to publicly express my sincere sympathies to the Nichols for their loss. This was an unfortunate 1 in 10,000 event that had occurred because of mistaken belief that the pop-off valve was open when it was actually closed. I really do not feel that this is the result of something I did medically that fell below the standard of care, and I therefore respectfully disagree with the committee's suggestion that I was potentially gross negligent. With regards to the allegation that I failed to show respect to the owners in not communicating with them, I did call them twice during the incident and told them what had happened. Then when they arrived at the hospital, I was tending to Mia until the owners met and spoke with the practice manager, Mrs. Ponder, as I was unavailable. Mrs. Ponder was the one who conveyed to me that the owners wanted to discontinue CPR. At that point, when CPR was discontinued, I was emotionally and mentally devastated over what had happened. I had never experienced something like this before, and I wanted to find out how this could have happened. After confirming that the pop-off valve had not been opened, it took me time to collect myself, especially given the fact that I had just been through a prolonged resuscitation effort and was trying to support my team as they too were processing what happened. By the time the owners had already left the practice. Again, I am deeply saddened by this case, and I want the board and Nichols to know that following this tragedy, the practice has taken steps to prevent this from happening again. The technicians involved in the incident were both given corrective action and performance reviews. In addition, we repeated anesthetic safety training for all technical staff involved in anesthetic events throughout the hospital. In addition, the practice has invested over $20,000 in replacement prop-off valves and other anesthetic equipment to try and prevent another episode like this happening in the future. These valves are not readily available in veterinary medicine, were purchased from a human anesthetic supplier. The valves are designed to release at pressure of 20 psi, even if the pop-off valve is inadvertently left engaged. This should eliminate any further issues with human error and safeguard patients from this type of accident. Thank you.
Thank you. Stoll, anything, statement on behalf of?
No, just to echo what the doctor said, that medically she didn't do anything that was medically inappropriate. This was just a human error.
There's our fire alarm.
So we're going to exit out this